Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, 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 hello. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. My name is Alex Q, and welcome to Series 2, Episode 2 of Miscast.
Woo!
Going on an adventure. Adventure.
Brilliant.
Adventure.
Well, you've had 3 months to think of that.
Adventure. This is our second episode. Where each episode, using the expertise of my superstar co-host and special guest, we discuss tabletop topics that we hope will help improve your generalship, expertise, and enjoyment of your gaming experience. It's the podcast that will talk nonsense and sense. Spoiler, we've had 3 months off. There's going to be a lot of nonsense.
Has it been three months?
Good. I know. And it's the podcast, here it comes, that's just found out Birdsong isn't quite what it seems. It's the podcast that's been drowning in memory foam, and it's the podcast that's found out something very interesting about upside down hobnobs. It's that kind of podcast.
Oh my God.
3 months worth. 3 months worth of the inside of your brain, Alex.
Yeah. Which one do you want first? You got birds, memory foam, hobnobs.
You see my bed in the background there?
Yep.
Obviously, we can see each other.
Great for an audio medium, Darren. Yeah.
Well, so we've had this memory foam mattress for about 2 years. And Alex
picked memory foam. Good, yeah.
Yeah, Alex's side is perfectly flat and stiff and wonderful and comfy. And mine has got the biggest ass fucking dip in it. My memory foam mattress is forgotten.
This is exactly what I was going to talk about, because I got a new memory foam mattress. And it was like some bloody Saudi Arabian film with me, like, literally getting swallowed into the absolute sand, into the middle of it. I actually couldn't, just felt like just getting absolutely crushed by just memory foam. I don't know how anyone uses it.
I just don't like the constant reminder I've got a fat ass every night.
Don't you get that whenever you just like catch yourself in the mirror then?
Hey, I've lost a stone recently.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats. Birdsong. My dad...
Oh, Birdsong.
Yeah.
Some Birdsong. Okay, go on then.
When I was a kid, my dad had this little, instrument that you filled with water. It was like a little sort of metal pipe, and you could make all manner of different birdsong with it. That's what that's what memory foam you kicked into my brain there. It was a childhood of bird noises. It was great.
You know, there's crazy people that can actually do it with their mouths as well without any... things.
The best at it are the birds, though, aren't they?
Birds. Well, you say that, but this goes to the actual thing that I found out about was the bird. All that lovely bird song in the morning. You wake up, you're listening to your jazz.
Yeah, it's really growing. It's really
your coffee, and you're listening to all of that lovely, relaxing. And actually, lots of it's territorial. So loads of them are going, Dave, Dave, get the fuck off my branch, Dave.
Isn't that obvious?
Dave, get the fuck off the tree. That's literally what they're doing, but in bird noises.
How do you know that, Alex? I know you're a scientist, but...
Sciencey things.
Science reasons, yeah.
Sciencey things, yeah. Very territorial.
Upside down hobnobs?
Hobnobs. Upside down hobnobs.
I always like that sketch about hobnobs. You know that Peter Skase? They're like the sort of SAS, territorial army of sort of biscuits.
They're the pay for tea dipping.
Exactly. Again!
This fact is about... You want to have a guess about what upside down hobnobs means?
No, go on.
It involves with tea. So you're supposed to, if you're dunking a hobnob in tea or sushi in soy sauce, to eat it, you're supposed to turn it upside down because the chocolatey bit or the fishy bit for sushi is on your tongue, not the other way around. So you get more of a flavor eating it upside down.
Okay.
There you go.
Got it. I break mine in half, put the two sides together. That allows me to put the entire thing in the cup, submerge it so that all the air that's inside the hobnob bubbles out. Mm-hmm. I've got tea going completely through the biscuit.
Oh, that's the thing.
I eat it. That means that I've got a chocolatey center. Now, that for me is the best way to eat a hobnob. I disagree with that whole premise, Alex. I'm sorry. Fuck yourself.
Yeah, but yours is now a soup, though. What's going on here, you savage?
Do what? My hobnob is a soup.
You put the whole thing in the tea,
Of course. The whole fucking thing. How can you?
What? I learned how some not necessarily a biscuit stroop waffle. That's a bit like a biscuit, isn't it? No stroop waffle,
The Dutch ones, yeah.
Yeah, so I went to a tournament.
Shout out to stroop waffles, yeah.
Dutch friend Lex gave me a packet and told me how the best way to eat those. Do you know the best way to eat a stroop waffle is?
I bet it's not dunking the whole fucking thing in a mug of tea.
No, but it does the same thing as what Darren was describing. Mm. The way the Dutch eat a stroop waffle is you get it, and then you put it on top of the hot beverage, and the heat and the steam that comes off melts the caramelly stuff in the middle, the toffee or whatever it is.
And it goes in.
It makes it much more delicious to eat.
See, the Dutch sound on my level.
Yeah. They like things sticky.
Is that an insult or is that a compliment?
Oh, fucking funny, man.
Okay. Right.
Talking of waffle, then have we got through the waffly bit at the start now?
Yeah, that's the waffle. Shout out to Steve.
Hot waffle.
That's for you. That's for you, baby.
Okay.
Right. Let's get on to the intro, shall we? You've heard the first of my sexy co-host and his sexy serenades. He is talking nonsense about hobnobs, but anyway. He goes by @positivevictim on Twitter. It is Darren Watson. Hello, Darren.
Hello, gorgeous pants. It's so lovely to see everyone, isn't it? How am I? I am in the middle of like conquering eBay, as I mentioned to you before. For the
benefit. Oh yeah, you're selling some robots.
I'm selling a fuck ton of my old shit that I found under my bed, in my shed, in carry cases that I haven't looked at for like 5 years. In fact, I opened one carry case and I had some Sylvaneth dryads that I had put shiitake mushrooms on the base because they looks like bark.
Actual
shiitake mushrooms. And my original plan was to varnish them with spray to obviously seal them. But I forgot. Fucking, I didn't use them. So when I opened this carrying case, it's just fucking long. Oh. So, yes, don't do that, guys.
When you're going to do that because you're a fun guy, Darren.
You just can't resist it. You just can't resist it. I might keep track of how many puns you come up with in any given show.
Yeah, pun count. She's someone who, one of the listeners will do it. Tell us how many times I mentioned the word sock and how many times Owen says does.
Owen mentions something inane.
No, that was a good one, though. Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah, well done. Well done.
So, yeah, and I said to you earlier that I was tweeted on Twitter. I've been doing, I had to find something to lose a bit of weight because I went to Warhammer World. Do you know the team event that was there when I ran the gash and all the ghouls and
you did the infinite ghoul
destroy people's souls creating that. I'm the worst person in the world. I went there, but I at the end they took a picture and I jutted my chin out so that my neck looked thinner. And I breathed in so I would look, you know, my stomach wouldn't look so big. And I still looked fucking huge. It's the first time
I thought you looked bigger than you actually are, though, to be fair.
Maybe. Well, I was 14. I was 14 and a half stone, which is the largest I've been in my entire adult life. So I was like, I'm going to do something about this. But I had to find something where I didn't have to do any exercise because I fucking detest it. And I didn't want to change what I was eating because it's already quite difficult because being an idiot vegan is fuck all you can eat anyway. And I'm one that doesn't really like fruit or veg.
Brilliant.
You're totally fucked, aren't you?
I'm totally fucked, yeah. So
what have you been doing, licking trees?
No, I've been doing time-restricted eating. So you eat between the hours of 12 and 8 p.m. And then at the weekend, you do what the fuck you want. And then every so often, you do a 24-hour fast or a 48-hour fast. I almost tried to do a 72-hour fast, but I was feeling a bit lightheaded after 50 hours. And I thought, I'm not doing this to kill myself. I'm working my way up to it. But long story short.
Working your way up to death. I mean, we all are, really. That's quite an existential thing to say, Darren.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
not the right medium to have this conversation right now, Owen, about the.
But I'm down to 77 kilograms, which is.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Incredible.
That's all right, isn't it? None of you have told me how great I look.
That's lighter than I am.
So now, when you take your top off at tournaments, Darren, you're going to be like an Adonis, not an Adonna.
I was an Adonis before, not Madonna. Yeah. Right, that's number two, pun. Wonderful. Yeah. Chalk it up.
Well, I haven't even mentioned socks twice yet. Anyway, okay, Darren, you look gorgeous.
Thank you. So do you.
So that's fantastic. Right, we're supposed to be doing this one fast this evening.
Minimal waffle, aren't we? We might come back with more hot waffle at the end.
Right, let's get the second host in then. He is everyone's favourite sexy sock seductor. You can find him at I'll just sock it up on the gram. He's at OJ180 on Twitter. Sorry, X. It's the Owen Jackson.
That was a great intro again. Thanks, Alex. How you doing? I'm going to ask how you are. How are you, mate?
Well, that's my job. I'm supposed to ask how you are. I'm very good, though. Thank you. We talked about all my fun stuff already, so.
Well, I'm similar. Yeah, good, I think. Yeah.
I was USA and being famous on the Twitch and the YouTubes.
I've been to America a couple of times. Yeah, I didn't get to go to Castle this year, which was a shame. I just couldn't make it work. But
what was the one you were commentating on? What was that one?
Nova.
Oh, Nova.
Yeah, Nova was good. I played in the Invitational, commentated on the Invitational, played in the singles, and commentated on the singles.
Nice.
And Leo won from episode one.
And Leo, yeah. Pick up Leo. That does feel like a long time ago. Have we really not recorded since then?
Well, basically, what happens is that we have people on this podcast, and then we teach them so much that they go on to win tournaments. And so our guest will win the next tournament afterwards.
I guarantee he won't.
I did that, and that was good. I've been pushing Beasts of Chaos around, which I've really enjoyed. And then I think I wrote down some because we're going to talk about tournaments.
We are.
I went to Blackout, Nova, Facehammer, LGT, and our guest Mark's event, Symposium.
So only four tournaments. Bit of a slow five. Calendar for you, isn't it?
Five.
Five
of the beasts.
Beastly beasts.
Six if you include the Invitational. Beast
Liqueur or no Beast Liqueur?
No Bellicor anymore. I don't think he's got as much value as he used to have because there's less like single hammer units. I think the threats are a bit more spread. So he's gone. I might be wrong, but 12 bulls and lots of lads to run around and
lots of lads.
You've been successful, haven't you, with that build without him? I would suggest you were right.
Mixed. I was at LGT and then I was a bit jet lagged and had pushed a bit hard in a couple of games at Mark's event Symposium. I actually had my worst result in a long time. Yeah, I went 2-3, which is fine. It happens. But
get him off the show.
Yeah, exactly. I know. One more of those and I'm done, right? And also I was a right salty bastard, but we'll come on to that later maybe.
You salty?
Never. But no, I've had a great time and life is treating me well. I'm the happiest I've been in a long time. So,
yes, I like that.
No complaints from me. Happy boy.
Good.
And happy to see you all as well. Chat some hammies. I've actually seen Mark this week. We bumped into each other.
Oh, my God. Get a room.
You work in London, don't you?
We work in the same building sometimes. I work in the building that Mark works in. So we talk about toy soldiers in every now and
then. Lift.
I would like
the lift together. Just look at each other.
Yeah,
corner of your eyes.
Toilet.
Ooh.
Toilet break, was that?
We just made a stable toilet. There's a bit more space in there.
Yeah, it's nice and cozy. But yeah, I'm great. I'm good, thanks. Looking forward to talking tonight.
Right, enough of you. I've had enough of your own. So, we need to get our lovely guest in. You've heard him already. Some say he was organising tournaments before there were even any players. Some say the Olympic Committee run their Olympic plans past him before they confirm their dates. Mm. Some even say events management used to be called marks management. You can find him at Warboss Wilson on X.
Yeah.
It's Mark Wilson, everybody.
Woo! Guys, good evening.
We're honoured.
Well,
hello, Mark.
Hello. Hello, guys. It's nice to be here. Normally, I would say, you know, how kind of grateful I am for you having me on the podcast, but this is episode number 13. I actually peruse some of your previous gets. And the fact that I'm on after luminaries such as Laurie Huggett Wild.
There we go.
It, you know, has left me a little bit salty. So.
In our defence, we tried to have you and Nico on to do a Nomad Feastmasters special to go through the creation of that because you did a lot of work on that.
You tell him, Darren. Yeah,
and both, it was impossible to get you and Nico on at the same time.
Yeah, impossible, some say. Yeah, it was true. Well, it is lovely to have you on eventually, Mark. So thank you very much for coming on. Eventually.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Get off.
This is
anyway.
Right,
he smelled that
full hat trick tonight for Owen already. We're only one.
Oh, that's bullshit. That was mine. Anyway, right. I first thing to say before we get into our lovely episode, which is about events, if you hadn't guessed, just to say thank you to everyone to reply to our tweet about what to cover. We had lots of messages about events, which will be this one. We also had lots of messages about movement and the minutiae of movement. So our next episode will be discussing movement. These guys don't know that yet, so just keep it between us.
Oh, excellent. But
movement's the next one. Mm-hmm. So, events. Mark.
So let's start off with a big question here, shall we? Are we talking
please.
About or are we talking about tournaments? Or are events synonymous with tournaments?
Oh, I love it. Let's go over to our experts. Darren.
I think we, as a collective, are competitively focused. So I would frame it around that, because that's a huge subject, and we've already spent 20 minutes talking about shite, and Mark's time's limited, right? So perhaps if we could frame it around a context of competitive events, where all the salty, thirsty bastards go.
Does
that make sense? Like, because I don't know about other events.
I would like to talk about tournaments because that means that we might be able to talk about clocks because people don't like clocks at events, but clocks at tournaments, totally fine.
Yeah.
But no, in all seriousness, Mark, I think there is a clear, you would have more insight in this, I think, definitely. But I've got a question for you then. Do you run tournaments or do you run events?
I run events.
Mm. Interesting.
Okay. Good answer.
I run events. Okay. And the reason why I think events are the best medium for our kind of combined hobby is because, let's face it, at the end of the day, you know, if you call something a tournament, it suggests that people have put in a vast amount of training, and they have innate skill. And it almost, you know, it's almost the kind of equivalent of a sport. And I think even though people practice hard and they do put the hours in, I think I don't really think we really come together to actually, you know, seriously compete against each other in that way. I think we play as a community, as a group. We aren't playing chess. We aren't playing these kind of binary sports. We are playing games which have kind of some, you know, an element of chance. They have rules which are sometimes fairly subjective. And I think I think tournaments is too harsh a word for them. And I think for some people as well, it's not about the time that people actually spend playing the game on the table. It's the before, it's the after, it's the during. I think a tournament would suggest to me something a little bit more kind of sterile and a little bit harder edged. And I think there are some events which lean into that a little bit heavily, or rather heavier. But I think for the main part, people go to tournaments/events because at the end of the day, people just want to have a good time. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that in our desire to find new and interesting ways to prove, you know, who may or may not be the best player in a tournament setting. That's a little bit of a monologue, and maybe I went a little bit off piece there, and went in a bit heavy too early. But I just wanted to really answer Owen's question. I mean, that's what I think. I do run events, and I think most other people really, when you boil it down, they are running events. And I think tournaments are actually a very, you know, if you look at the true meaning of a tournament, I think the actual amount of true tournaments is probably vanishingly small.
Mm. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So
alongside that, then, if you're saying you're running events and therefore, you know, tournaments a bit more binary, a bit more kind of hard edged, I guess, then I guess it gets to the crux of this whole episode, really, is how do you go about creating an event that caters to this whole myriad of people? Yeah. Or can you not? Is that not possible? Can you not create a single event for our whole wide, glorious community that caters for everyone? And therefore, do you need to go more hard-edged for the guys that want to, or girls that want to go and, you know, compete? Or is it possible to create an event that is for everyone?
Yeah, I think you really have to, try to cater for everybody, because those players who are at the top of the game, I imagine everybody here, and, you know, probably most of the people who will kind of take this on board as well. Those guys are, you know, at the top of the pyramid, they will create a tournament almost for themselves inside any event anyway, because they have a agenda, because that's a bad word. But they probably have a goal which is a little bit separate from, I guess, most of the people, you know, kind of who will go to an event. And I think where I've been, heading over the years, is my focus is a bit less on potential winners of tournaments, because they'll create their own fun, you know, and they've got things which they want to achieve at an event. And I'm focusing more now on people who might just constitute the field or who might be on the bottom tables, because at the end of the day, you know, kind of everybody pays the same amount of money. Everybody wants to kind of enjoy what is probably a fairly expensive weekend away from family or, you know, or with friends. And I think I think too much focus on events over the course of the last few years has been on top players and and what their achievements are. And I think, I guess this is coming across a little bit kind of woolly, but I think, I really think that we have to make events and tournaments a bit more attractive to the general player, to the 2-3 player or the 1-4 player, because without those guys who are coming in and who might run up to events and might get smashed off the table. I think without those guys to make up the field, then there aren't any events at all. Because events are not going to be sustainable if there's only 8 top players there or 10 top players there. There's always, kind of 50 people or however many who are making up the numbers, and that's the only way you can ever make an event possible.
Mm.
And, I think that kind of batch of people who are a significant majority, really, they are often a bit of a side for, I think, when it comes to TOs and to events in general. And I've definitely been consciously trying to improve the conditions for the general player. I just realized then I said the 2 and 3 player, and then I caught a sideways glance at Owen because he's on.
That's me, baby. Let's go.
So whatever hero, and I'm just trying to think of your best interest, buddy. That's all.
Thanks, I appreciate you.
Do you think that's developed, Mark? Because you say that you're making that conscious decision to concentrate on that now. I remember going to some of your earliest, or maybe perhaps even the first one you ever run. Was it Blood Tithe?
First major one, and
that felt sweaty, man.
It was very professional.
I loved it.
And my opinions have changed over time, because as a new TO, and I'm sure there are folks who will hear this podcast and perhaps they will aspire to run a tournament, or perhaps they've run some small events themselves. And it's fair enough to say that when I first set out running events, I was very keen to draw in the big names. Because in a sense, if you draw those in, it brings other people in as well. Because if people see, a famous player or a top player at your event, then it gives you a certain amount of credibility, which then kind of opens the door to other people. And I think as a new TO, it definitely took my eyes to the top tables, because I really wanted to make sure that these players, excuse me, who are very kind of like, I guess, famous players, kind of in the public eye, obviously inside our...
Mark, it's fine. You can say Alex.
I don't know if you were there, Alex. If you were, you didn't make much of an impression on me. I was thinking Jack and Darren and people like that. But So my attention was, it's my first event. I really have to make sure these experienced guys are getting everything which they want and expect from an event. And then the guys down the bottom tables, I barely blinked in them all weekend because I was so carried away in just making sure events ran as they should, and that the top players who are more kind of used to going to events were satisfied and had me at their disposal, in effect.
I was very satisfied. Fucking that made me love team tournaments. It's the first sort of proper one I've gone to. And then I'm of the opinion now that Team Warhammer is the best Warhammer. And that's very much that tournament, Mark. So thank you for putting on such a fucking great show. But if you put all your focus on me, then perhaps that's why.
Well, it's off the dark, actually. It was quite a big big ambition. I think it was 2018, so it was fairly early on, but it wasn't my first event. My first event was it was way back in the midst of 2016, actually, a small one-dayer. But just on where the focus was. So originally, and I think it's still true today, if you go to any event anywhere in the world, and if you walk up to table one, typically it'll be at the front of the hall. It'll be by the TO's desk. It'll probably enjoy the best terrain as well. It'll be in a premium business. Sometimes I've been to events in the past before where there might be a small stage, let's say in a school hall, and the top table might be on a stage elevated over all the other plebs. Yeah. And, you know, I think we've all seen that before. And I, you know, I just
Hans GT, it goes out of the room, doesn't it? And the bottom tables are right the way around the corner under the stairs.
Right, and I remember going to the slaughter in the old days, and I think this was the tail end of 8th edition, and you know, the guys who were on the bottom tables were actually upstairs in a completely different little dark,
yeah, in the back hall bit,
The Davy Sports Club, wasn't it? Was it called the Davy? I think it was called the Davy.
I'm pretty sure they've moved now into a more kind of salubrious location. Mm-hmm. Was there. And that was that was really the status quo for events. And to cut a long story short, that's something which I've been consciously trying to move away from. And I'd like to see that happen more in the community as well, because as a player, I play events as well. And at the beginning of my journey, I'd go like a way to events, you know, to big 100 player events. I wouldn't speak to a TO the whole weekend. I wouldn't speak to the TO's assistant. I wouldn't speak to any top players. You know, there was no crossover at all, because there's probably about 50 yards of space between, you know, the tables that I was frequenting and those guys on their lofty spires. I think things have improved in AOS. I still think there's a major problem in other systems, but that's one thing I'm really consciously trying to change. And there's a few ways of going about that as well.
I was just going to lead into that, really, is that you've said that it's you've focused or tried to develop it. Are there any specific key things that you've recognized to try and make it better? I mean, was it with brackets? I'm sure I've seen. So bracket prizes I've seen recently pop up.
Yeah.
Did Rob bring that in? Like the T-Sports Arena, they like the best in who won one game, who won two game, three game, four game. Because I thought that was a great innovation.
Yeah.
Also, you do get, I've seen it more and more, like especially on the first day, is there's no sort of hierarchy in terms of table numbers. Like everyone gets mixed together. And I think as well, Mark, I would say it's down to the TOs to make everyone feel welcome as well, right?
Yes.
Like, I don't know. I think it's nice as a player to play on the top tables and feel like the amount of time and money and whatever you've invested has meant that you get to play on one of the top tables or whatever. But like, certainly when Dan and I ran the Welsh Open, we would go, you know, we had enough people to go around all the tables and check in and make sure that everyone had time warnings and everyone had like checking how the game was going and, you know, you were available. I suppose it depends on the venue as well, I suppose, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And all those points which you just covered there were with the stuff that I've got on my little sheet of paper here, especially the brackets. You know, if you have that, it gives each and every player the ability to find their own success. You know, whether that's 1-4 or, you know, or whatever else, that's always good. I think kind of mixing up the table numbers as well is quite good, but is a bit of a challenge for a TO, because you need to be able to kind of identify where players are.
Mm.
A thing that I've started to do, and I've seen a few other people pick up on this as well, is rather than having, you know, the tables going from top to bottom, you sort of have them in a bit of a circle so that the lowest table is adjacent to the top table, which is quite nice as well. I would really advocate for TOs to just make sure that kind of all terrain on the bottom tables isn't just kind of leftover dregs, really. Because I've definitely experienced that as a bottom table player sometimes. And, yeah, you know, I think we just have to recognise that everybody puts in the same amount of, the same amount of effort, and the same amount of money and commitment. And if we're gonna improve our hobby and improve events generally, then we should probably start to treat everybody equally. And that has improved. I mean, I've been playing events now since the middle of 8th age. Fantasy and some of the conditions there were pretty dire, and we've all jointly improved
markedly over the last 6 or 7 years, for sure.
I feel bad now. That's not something I've ever experienced. That sounds terrible.
I would push back on one point, though, which is that not everybody invests the same amount of time in the hobby, because the people that are the best at the game are the ones that have learned all their rules, all their opponents' rules, and hence why they are then successful. So there should be merit and reward in putting that amount of effort in.
Yes.
Fair point.
I was talking about time, just in relation to the amount of time spent over the weekend.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
I think people do get the recognition for that because ultimately they get the prizes, they get the ranking points, they get picked. Mm. So, I think on top of all that, they probably shouldn't enjoy, kind of better scenery, more time, from the TO. I think the TO's job is to make sure that every one of his or her customers or patrons are all having a good time. And this is obviously coming from a perspective as a TO.
Mm.
And I suppose I'm preaching to people who may want to run TOs in the future, not necessarily, players who are already on the top 10.
Yeah, it's about trying to stop it being so skewed one way that it might have been historically, I guess is what you're saying, right? Yeah. The top players will get the platitudes anyway, whatever happens. Is there, and just playing devil's advocate, is there a risk of going too far the other way? Where the top players who want to be competitive, who want to enjoy playing against other top players, don't feel like it's really for them. I'm not saying it becomes
special enough. I'm not sure, Alex. I don't know. I mean, if you feel like it's not special enough for them, then maybe the events will improve as a whole. I don't think anybody can really expect special treatment for being a star. And I don't think people do.
Fuck off, Owen. You're a prima donna.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, you gave me a bit of extra time in round five just so that I definitely could eke out my 1 point loss, didn't you? You gave me.
I saw that classy look in your eyes. I was too afraid to come close to you. And I mean,
one thing we haven't touched on, Mark, and I mean, is the fact that most TOs do this as for next to no profit, and it's a big time investment and a labor of love. So, don't get me wrong. We're having a healthy debate as opposed. I'm not jumping down any TO's neck because it's a hell of a lot of work, isn't it? My God,
it's a lot of work. And I think if anybody is assuming this, this podcast now, thinking, oh wow, I'm going to start to run TOs and make loads of money, you've been in the wrong game for sure. I think some people do make a little bit of money, but that's mainly kind of really large events who run those events.
They're on 40k tournaments, don't they?
Yeah, well, because I think ways to earn some money. And I think TOs, as we've talked about on Twitter quite a lot, and I know we've had this discussion previously, but I think TOs are entitled to earn a little bit of money for their time.
Oh, fuck, because, we should all play more.
Let me tell you this. I mean, I think if I'd spent the same amount of time and effort I put into to running events and organize everything for them over the years, I think I might have made more if I was just kind of searching for loose change in the gutter. Because it's not something which you ever do for money.
What's the best way to show appreciation for you, Mark, at the end of an event, during an event, like leading up to the event? Because I would give you, hopefully I've come across as grateful throughout the years.
I think people just, I'm not sure if TOs in general are just natural kind of people pleasers. There's those kind of different, I guess segments of personality, right? I can't remember how many there are. Are there five or six? And there are different, I guess, archetypes of character. And I think most of the TOs I'm probably going to be, you know, kind of people pleasers. And that sounds like a little bit like it's some kind of slur or an insult. But I think generally, you know, you might get this if you work in the service industry as well. Is, you know, there is a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction if people tell you that your event is, you know, is great. And every TO will enjoy hearing that, because at the end of the day, you know, that is prime, you know, that is why we want to do it. It's that also, I think we want to test ourselves as well. You know, I think we want to prove to ourselves that we have the ability to, you know, to run these events and to run them efficiently and to provide a platform for people to play. And some people just want a project. If I don't have an ongoing project, I just get distracted. You know, I always need something there to get my teeth into. I've got a fairly easy job, you know, to be honest. And you know, I'm not as challenged in that as I particularly as I perhaps kind of could be. And I think because of that, you know, I think boredom creeps into it. And I think having projects which excite other people as well. Yeah. If you don't have a particularly exciting job, I think you need a few things to spark off other people, and that definitely helps, you know, because you know, if we announce tournaments, you know, I'm sure Owen's had this as well from the Welsh ET. As soon as you post on, you know, on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, and you get people saying, "Oh, great, I can't wait to come," it certainly starts to sort of kindle a fire inside you, and it's just a nice feeling to do it and come out of the other side, and just know that it went well. I think fundamentally, there's not one single TO who I know who really does it for the money. Well, except for one, but he's not even he's just the boss of the TOs. And I think if you look at people in the past as well who've run really big events, people like Ben Curry, he was very front and center in the community, and he really tried to sort of drag events into the mainstream. And I'm pretty sure he didn't really make any money at the end of the day, because it all goes back in costs as well. And that, don't do it for money. I think that's the point there to underline.
You touched on a few things there, and I'll just ask you this before I go to Darren and Owen, just about making, or it's nice to hear that people have come to your events and say, "Oh, this was great." And you yourself have acknowledged that you've changed slightly in how you have developed your events, and you've noticed certain things. Is there anything in particular that you think has made a massive difference to tournaments? Is it bigger or more spacious venues? Is it better terrain? Is it prize support? Is it brackets? Is it sideboards, food? Or is it all of the above? Is it just multifactorial?
Well, yeah, I think food's my pet hate. when it comes to events as well, because I think the food you provide to an event can make or break it.
You think it's that much? If the food's bad, it's a bad event. Or if it's good, it's good.
Well, people remember.
Yeah, it's what people remember. It's what I remember as well, being a tournament goer as well. And it's kind of weird, right? Because we I know, like kind of 1,200 meals a year or whatever. But you know, for some odd reason, the one meal that we decide to eat at a tournament becomes such a big deal. I think outside of that, I think the things that don't really seem to have an impact, I think terrain just, I think it passes players by, and
most.
It's not a problem until it is a problem, if you know what I mean.
It's not a problem until it is a problem. I think if I work out all the time I've spent on events, probably 90% of that has been on terrain. And definitely I could have cut that by a third, and it wouldn't have changed anyone's opinion of the event whatsoever. You know, it just wouldn't change it. I think you can go overboard on that. It's not really what sticks in players' minds, because, you know, I think we've all had that as well. I mean, if you're so into the game, if someone asks you immediately after the game, what color was your opponent's army painted? You won't even remember.
No,
right? You'll have no idea. And I think it's the same as terrain. And I've wasted so much time kind of dry brushing trees and putting little bits of little tufts on bases and things. And it's, you know, it's just, you know,
what you're saying is we need 2D terrain.
Well, you would.
Well, introduce that. I saw how people, you know, kind of responded to my trees by just kind of chucking them onto the floor. So,
what are you talking about?
Yeah, horrendous. People are twats, aren't they?
I've got a thing then. So, off the bat here, top three things at a tournament. I just wrote three things down. I actually wrote four down, but
I was going to ask you and Darren, Owen. So there you go.
Well, I have been to probably about, I must have been to about over 100 tournaments in 5 years. So I've got a reasonable steer on it. And I just wrote
at
down.
At least. And the rest.
Clear communication, well-organized, a good pack, a good atmosphere, and actually did put down good terrain marks. So,
bless you.
So yeah, those are the things.
What order though, Owen? What order?
I actually think that like clear communication and deadlines and a good pack is probably more important than anything, really. People need knowing where they need to be, when they need to be, when lists are in, all that stuff. If all the basics are really nailed on, then that makes things very clear. I like that.
I did notice that food was not in that list, Owen.
No.
Interesting.
You can always bring your own.
Pat lunches. Pat lunch tournaments.
Pat lunch.
Aaron, over to you, buddy.
Food won't make my list because I'm an idiot vegan, and vast majority of tournaments I go to, and I don't expect to be catered for either. I don't want people to go out of their way to feed me. I can feed myself. I'm an adult. If there is food that I can eat, it's normally chips, and I'm fine with chips. That's not a problem. For me, what's super important at a tournament is consistency. I have been to events where I wasn't a very successful tournament gamer, and I've been to events where people know that I'm a very successful tournament gamer, and even saying that makes me feel uncomfortable, but I guess I can describe myself as such. I know that I get treated differently. Painting scores are subjective. I've been to events before where I've been a nobody and I've had terrible painting scores, you know, inconsistent bases. I've been knocked down 10 points. And it's cost me third place. It's taken me down to 10th place. And that's made me feel really fucking rotten because it takes me so long to paint shit. But because my bases weren't subjectively as nice as someone else's who'd spent fucking 2 days painting their army. Anyway, don't get me started. And then I've been to events before where my army's been dog shit because I've borrowed it from Left, Right and Chelsea. And the person that's come around knows me and goes, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll just give you points. You know, so consistency. If you're going to subjectively mark people on their hobby, give them some fucking feedback as well, because I remember that event that I won't name it, but that event that's put me off painting models for about 12 months. Like, seriously, I was like, what's the fucking point of me putting all this effort in if I'm just going to get marked down 10 points because the sand is a bit different? I've got problems painting because my eyes stream all the time, so I can't concentrate when I'm painting, you know. So that really put me off. The point of those painting, sorry, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here. Obviously, I'm quite passionate. The point of those painting rules is to encourage hobby. In actual fact, it completely destroyed my hobby for about 12 months. So, like, if I'd have had some feedback and some guidance, maybe. And I appreciate you can't, if you've got someone that's going around doing it, they can't give the time to everyone. But going back to Mark's earlier point, I'm pretty sure if I was to go to the same tournament now and the chap came around, now he knows me and he was giving it, I either wouldn't get marked down or it would be fully explained, you know, whereas before it wasn't. So consistency at a tournament is something that's super important to me. I think knowledge, like Owen was saying, very clear pack and explanation of the terrain. Terrain's important to me in a different sense, in so much as the rules have got to be explicit. so that you're not getting gotched on the table when all of a sudden someone jumps into a garrison that you weren't aware was a garrison or something like that. But that's got better, I think. I think in the UK, actually, we don't pay as much attention to terrain and the terrain rules as they do on the continent. Like,
yeah.
People in Europe are fucking really, really hot on terrain rules. They can do so many shenanigans.
Yeah.
Often
the terrain rules are incredibly easy, right? I mean, there's only a page in the core rules. There's only, I think three different types of terrain, right? There's a defensible building. There's a wildwoods, and then there's cover, right? I mean, yeah. Then we invent our own on the tournament scene as well with Impassable. It is quite easy for TOs. I mean, even if you don't have a appropriate terrain, you can write down what kind of terrain it is on a little bit of paper and stick it to the terrain. And I know people do that. I've seen people do that. Quite a lot, and it just clears up that kind of ambiguity that you're alluding to, Darren.
Yeah. So yeah.
How do you feel about terrain maps, then, Darren?
I like them. Richie does a really good one, doesn't he? That he uses for his just play events that Feud on the Fens adopted, and I like it as well because there is a skill in what I really love about Warhammer. One of my favourite parts of it is deployment and the opening. I found the whole opening 15 minutes of the engagement, like the psychological warfare, the meeting someone, the setting down the terrain, the deployment, that fascinates me the most. And, you know, that the rolling off to see who puts the terrain down, that's a skill that the vast majority of the gaming community completely fucking ignore. You know, most times you walk up to a table and someone will go, I whacked it, any old shit down, do you mind? And I go, yes, actually, we're going to roll. Whereas most people will go, oh, no, I don't mind, you know, because we're also British and polite. But in actual fact, if you give that part of the game the respect it deserves, it can be fascinating. It can be really enjoyable.
I think maps are important on that sense because it takes the abuse out of it.
100%. Yeah, that's what I was alluding to.
Maps or guidance, at least, anyway. Like you in your PAX, Mark, you've got this is what each piece does. And you, even at the start of your tournament, you had a chat with everybody about how you were going to play how we were going to play Wildwoods.
Yeah.
It
really does help to have a terrain map or to have tables laid out, but of course not everybody can do that. Are we going to talk about clocks, though, Ian? Was that
no, I was just making sure that we're all aware that we're all on a bit of a tight schedule tonight, so we're getting all the points.
That's all right, it's all good. Darren, your third one, you have a number three.
I did have a number three, but I thought Owen just showed a picture of a penis then. What's important? So, yeah, consistency, like clear rules and communication. And deodorant in the toilets. Fantastic.
Deodorant in the toilets. Space. Space is another one that people seem to talk about a lot.
It's a massive thing. It's a big thing for me as well. And, I don't think I would go to invent anymore which didn't have the right amount of space, because I think the days of having to crawl underneath a table or kind of walk half a mile to get around the other side, I think those days are over. I think people I think you even need to kind of reduce numbers to increase space. Mm-hmm. I know that some people are kind of up against that because they've got a margin on the on the turnover of the event, which they have to make, but I think some people, I think we're seeing events occasionally which are a bit too kind of crammed together, I think if you have your tables and rows, then you probably just have to choose the right battle plans so that you don't have to kind of walk around the other side of the table. Mm-hmm. Because tables are of, I guess, variable height, as are gamers as well. And some people find it a little bit hard to get around. So just make sure that your battle plans are in sync with your with the amount of space that you have.
Just to expand on that, like reducing numbers to make people more comfortable, Mark, I think we've seen before COVID, the biggest prestige was always given to like the 100 mana events or the mana events, and there wasn't so many events about. Now there's a fucking event every weekend. What a time to be alive!
It's completely changed. It's completely changed.
And now we're seeing we're seeing a bit more prestige being given to these smaller events. And as a competitive chap, I'll tell you, the hardest events to win are the 20 manas, the 30 manas.
Yep.
You've got to beat the best people on the day in that room. Whereas a 100 player or two player event, you can go five games and not anyone that's particularly difficult.
You're right up there. Yeah, I think that's true. And the scene has changed quite a lot. I think when we first started, we were looking at maybe like four or five events, which you're talking about, which were all 100 player plus, and then kind of any events which fell outside of those were always feeder events, right? There was a whole kind of trend at one point for warm events. But that's completely changed now, and it feels like, especially in the UK scene, it's become completely decentralized. And there's no one person who seems to be leading the scene or no kind of cabal of people who are leading the scene. And now, I checked on the Dankhold, which is a great source, to go to,
mm-hmm.
especially for events. And you're right that there's an event. Kind of every weekend from now until March, when it starts to get a little bit spotty, because people haven't even put events in for them. it's completely changed. I think we've seen a shift towards local events, which is great, right? And the reason why that's great is because at some point you are going to burn out of playing, kind of at tournaments. You really are. And if you don't have a local scene to fall back on, as you're approaching kind of 40s and 50s, you won't have anyone to play with, You just won't.
Unless you're Owen.
Unless you're Owen. Because we all, as we all start to lose our drive and testosterone, the thought of kind of driving up to Stockport or Cardiff for an event, it's going to wane, So
or flying to America or flying to Australia .
I'm definitely there. I can definitely see and feel the desire sort of draining out. I'm nowhere near as thirsty as I used to be.
Yeah,
I think it's actually a good thing.
Does that mean there's stuff from these local events that could be used in bigger events to make them better? I guess the crux of my question is, what are the things that these kind of small events have that make them more enjoyable? Make them kind of more. I guess you want to spend your time on. Could you do those things in a big one?
No, I think it'd be difficult because I think the attraction of smaller events is the opportunity to speak to everybody. I think the perfect level for events now is between 20 to 30 people because you get the opportunity to speak to everybody over the course of a weekend. I think if you go to a 60 player plus event, it can be like ships in the night, and you just don't have the kind of opportunity to really. To really talk to people on anything other than a fairly superficial level. And I the amount of people who are telling me now that they prefer smaller events has really changed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's definitely a good thing.
Has that changed how you're going to approach your tournaments?
Yeah, for sure. Because now if I come to run an event, I'll always try to take into account, our top players, but I'll also take into account the sort of guys who we have at the local club, who are as far removed from that as possible, and they may go to one or two events a year. They might go to a one day, which is like 12 people, and then a massive 2 day for them, which is 30 people. And I think you really have to kind of ensure that their experience isn't entirely horrible.
Mm. What do you think about the really, really, big blowout events that people love going to, the LVO, the big 500, 600 person? Looks pretty fun from the outside.
I can see the attraction. I think winning those is kind of easier, as Diamond said. I think it's potentially easier to win those.
Easier
to win or to place well for sure. I think enjoyable. I think the risk there is if somebody went to one of those as the first event, then there'd be, you know, there's potential there for them to be entirely lost, right? If you're in the middle rows or the middle tables, you might just bounce around and play certain people who never played. But that's okay for me because I'm quite a kind of outgoing guy. But for some people, it might be quite a lonely experience in a way. I think in smaller events, it just feels a bit more kind of collegiate and Corinthian, you know, the whole spirit around them. And I think it's just, I think that's where I am. And I think it's where a bunch of other people are as we do see this shift away now into smaller events. I think, I'm not sure if we want to take this conversation off into other areas, but, you know, there's always been a link between the size of events and the amount of points for rankings or for ratings. And I know there's been a few kind of iterations of that over the years as well. And that in itself has become a little bit kind of fractured as well. There's various different kind of competing systems. So I feel we've kind of lost our way a little bit in that correlation between event size and the merits of, you know, kind of playing at those events. And, you know, I feel that's the detriment of small events. I feel like they should be kind of represented a little bit better there. If you look at 40K, right? I mean, you know, I think as we always say, you know, if like a 40K player will play in a bin if they're going to get some free ITC points. And we don't really want that to be part of our own peculiar and particular hobby.
I've got just one insight just in terms of go into lots of tournaments, and I agree with you, Mark, like your symposium event, and also it kind of mirrored what Rob's doing at the TSN Arena in Nottingham. Like, he runs 16 to 24 person events, and often practically the whole tournament will have dinner together on the Saturday night. And I mean, we met up probably a core of about 8 to 10 of us, didn't we, on both Friday and Saturday night of the symposium event. You know, had drinks and dinner together, talked about the game, talked about life. And, you know, that was really, you know, and the same thing happens with Robert's events. And that, I think that's a really lovely way to spend your weekend. So you can choose to sort of lean into that very much more as a social event, let's say. But then when I fly out and go to LVO or Nova, then that does feel more like a tournament, and there's an element of pressure that you put on yourself. But saying that,
I wanted to ask that, Owen, about Nova, because you've just been to one of these big blowout.
Yeah, and the thing that there's a move now, and I'm not sure, I think GW might start doing it for their events. Once you get over a certain size, then it's hard to get a true winner if you only just do 5 rounds. So Nova was 8 rounds, and the one thing I liked about that was that then if you could stay on and carry on playing on the Sunday, they created, it must have been around about 10 different brackets. So everybody, so first to eighth was top bracket, you play for the win, and our boy Leo won, you know,
congrats,
Leo. But then, you know, 9 to 16, I was in the second bracket down because I came 10th. But you went all the way down. And what you then found with all those brackets were that you had all players who had, through the course of 5 games, kind of found their level, whether that be 1-4 or 2-3 or whatever. And then you played in a little pod altogether. So I thought that was quite a nice way of, you know, there were a lot of people that came out of those little pods, you know, as like new friends and stuff like that. But I also think that in those big events, you do end up sort of sticking with your gang a little bit. So they're not very good. Like, I started going to tournaments and just going on my own and not knowing anybody. And I'm quite a gregarious, open chap. But if you're a little bit more introverted, then it could be really, you know, a really daunting experience. So if you go with a club, with club mates or with mates to one of these big events, I think you can have a wicked time because you've got like a little support group to return to in the evenings and things. But there's a danger that they could be a bit daunting for the newer players. But I would say that the big things I've gone to in America, they do feel more like tournaments than events. I think there's space for both of them, but I do think you're right. In the UK, we've definitely moved away from 4 or 5 big 100-person events every year. It's like, it's much more regional now, isn't it? but it gives you an opportunity then to like go, oh, meet the Bristol community or meet the community in, you know, Northamptonshire or go up to Sheffield, and you kind of dip in and there's players there that you've never met before because they only play within that certain community or whatever.
How do we feel about like what I would consider to be a bit of a big bad in the community at the moment, which is the golden ticket? How do we feel about that as a?
I think it puts, it's a double-edged sword. We were going to do it for the Welsh Open, but essentially you either fund the winner to go to the detriment of putting that money back into your local community and your local scene by investing in terrain and investing in prizes and investing in mats and maybe giving some money to the club. Like, for example, with the Welsh Open funds, we use that as a little bit of a fund to help the Welsh team. So if players can't afford the shirts or the travel, then the less advantaged players, we've got a little bit of a fund there. With the golden ticket, I think it takes too much money out of the scene. I think if GW are going to set this thing up, they make it more prestigious and they pay for people to go. So for example, I think it's general knowledge now, but Big Phil can't retain his trophy because he can't afford to fly out to Atlanta to play because... So I think if I personally don't like it because
I didn't receive a golden ticket. Have you, Darren?
I did last year. I was lucky enough to. Yeah. I won the LGT, and that. But they paid for everything. I don't know. I was under the impression it was GW that paid.
No. I think yours was subsidised by the LGT kind of 40k community, in a sense.
Wow, thank you.
I think I think the problem that I have, I think GW, I think if they're gonna run these events and take all the plaudits for it, then they should invest sort of something in it themselves.
They've got enough fucking money, haven't they?
Well they have. So it feels like they are really getting a free ride there, but I think also it's a bit self destructive for the scene as a whole because it reduces the status of all events to just mere qualifiers. If an event is pitching itself as a qualifier, it just detracts, right? Because if you run an event, the whole point of that should be for that person to win that particular event and get a trophy, and if you get some ranking points as well, great, and all the rest of it. But I think kind of pitching events as qualifying events for a GW event which they don't fund at all, I think is a little bit kind of backhanded by them, really. So I'm not a massive fan myself.
Did fund it, would you be a fan?
Yeah.
If he funded it,
we're in agreement.
Then. Yeah, so I think I would be. I don't like to see CTOs effectively put themselves out of pocket to draw kind of people towards these sort of events. And it was actually I think it was the community themselves who started to refer to these things as golden, as golden tickets. But now GW are referring to them in that way themselves. So it's been it's quite a shrewd bit of business by GW, but it's not really doing anything for the tournament scene.
Yeah, and not to throw shade on anyone who is going, because they're all excellent players who are going. Right. Like if you were to list off the list of players that are going, but I know multiple players that are going that came third or fourth. So it's not necessarily the best players that are going. It's the people that can afford it who are
yeah, playing. And we don't want play to win, right? Because that's extremely exclusionary, and we just don't want to be there. And it's a hobby that attracts all sorts of people. It shouldn't just be there for the ones who can afford to pay for the playing fares.
If it becomes popular though, then or if it does well, then they've more incentive to start paying for it to build it up.
I mean, let's be real. It's just a fucking marketing excuse for them, though, isn't it? It's just a way of them basically taking lots of nice photos and having some videos and having a load of social media content. I don't think it's for anything more than that.
Having been in Atlanta last, well, was it Atlanta last year? Where was it?
New Mexico,
of course. That's my fucking
joke. Fuck, I didn't even go, Darren. Come on.
Well, no one
can afford it.
But having been there and speaking with the people that were running it, they were really passionate. Like, they really, the people that are running it, or the boots on the ground, they were really excited. They wanted to build it. Shout out to Ryan as well, one of the chaps that run it. Between my flights between Phoenix and New Mexico, I got a call from my girlfriend and my dog had passed away. So, like, it was quite a rough time for me, and I didn't do so well in my games, which is fine. My head was gone, and also the people I were playing were exceptional, and I was running a silly corn army. But I then decided to, go home to get back to Alex as soon as possible. And Ryan, basically, my flight was all completely buggered up, and he got up about 5:30 in the morning to make sure I got to the airport. So I just want to say thank you very much, Ryan Schwartz. I'm fucking terrible with names. We're running it, and he was really passionate. Everyone there was really keen to build it, and they gave us a wonderful. It was a wonderful. They were really great.
And the Warhammer events, you know, kind of are great as well. Now I think it's Steve Wren who's running them now.
He's put loads of attention on the tables, the scenery. Yeah,
the trophies are great. Oh,
the trophies are fantastic. Look.
Oh, right. There's no shame.
So Darren is currently flexing for the audio medium by showing us his one of many trophies. I think what you're all saying is obviously TOs, and we mentioned this a bit, didn't we? That the TOs are putting lots of effort and time in. You know, GWTOs also put a lot of effort and time in. It's more about the process of this, of the golden ticket, rather than the people organizing the
action. That's what I was trying to get at.
This is all awesome conversation, as always we have on these podcasts, but I just want to kind of get down to the crux of the question that we've had lots of questions in about, what the main things that you three would think, or you would advise people to do if they were running a tournament next week. What would be your kind of big thing to focus on? And I'll start with you, Mark. I mean, you can pick things we've talked about already, like food, etc.
I think the biggest thing would be to not stress over the small details, because the players will just not notice them. There's been a few things, events which I've run, and I've been sat there on my kind of TO table behind my laptop having a complete panic attack, thinking, oh my god, it's all gone to absolute shit. Oh, it's going to be a disaster. But if the situation is kind of rescuable, which it almost always is, all the players are playing, and their eyes are only on the game. So I guess be easy on yourself. Don't worry, and don't forget, it's just the game at the end of the day. Just don't think that kind of. I think the players are so wrapped up in playing that those small details, that it's not going to register.
Okay, interesting. Owen?
A couple of things I learned from doing all the Hammer Time stuff were, don't think that you need to know every fucking rule that's out there. Like, I used to stress, and I bought all the battle tomes and would be trying to deal with like intricate, tiny little rules interactions. Generally, there'll be some very knowledgeable players at the event who you can just lean on, who might get it wrong. Hey, Mark, I think we both got something wrong together, didn't we? But anyway.
I normally ask you. So,
don't ask me, basically. But yeah, don't worry about knowing every rule. Just have a good, clear pack. I said it before, just write a good pack. Choose interesting missions, a variety of missions that test. Don't have them all in the middle. Don't have, like, we've got 10 good missions and 2 okay missions. So, choose some good missions, make it a varied experience for different players and different armies. And without being too sort of like glib, but just like try and enjoy it as well. I always think of it a bit like as being like a host at a party or something. You want to make sure everyone's got a drink in their hand and having a nice time. And
that's such a good analogy.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, you just make sure everyone's having a good time and you have a good time at the same time. Because
might be easier with that smaller group to start with then, once you get used to doing it. Yeah, definitely.
Also, one last little thing that Dan and I found was really good was we did spot prizes, silly spot prizes. You know, have your highest the first person in the whole room to have their highest pointed hero killed that battle round wins a spot prize. We gave away like Avalonor or something, or the first person to miscast twice with the same wizard in the tournament spot prize. So, you know, we invested, I don't know, whatever it was, like £100 on some little character models and just gave them out. And it meant that regardless of whether you won painting or sports or gaming or anything, people won some random stuff and felt involved. And like, it was like, wee, and you know, it was good. That sort of thing.
Yeah, fair enough. That'd be my Darren. Tip.
One thing I would like all TOs to concentrate on, and I would like to see more of, is public shaming of those fuckers that don't put their own table away at the end. You selfish assholes!
that's a very specific bit.
It does my absolute tits in that you'll see it at the end of an event. There'll be 80% of the room will just go, "Oh, down tools," and they'll watch 20% of the room pack their stuff away. And sometimes they don't even fucking say thank you. And I know this because I'm one of those people that does it. I will always put my table away and then I will put all my litter away and then I'll pack up someone else's table and then I'll go help someone else. And I'll just be dumbfounded that the scene is full of such wonderful people. But for those 10, 15 minutes when the tournament's ended and the TO's about to get the results, people turn into absolute dicks. So put your fucking table away.
And I love it.
I've got one last addition, if that's okay.
Go on then, Owen. One more, yeah.
Never fix the pairings.
Nah. we can all agree on that. Good grief. Yeah,
lovely. Very nice. Thanks, Owen.
I mean, come on.
Just a reminder, you can message Owen at OJ180 on X.
Yo, thank you very much. The truth hurts, baby.
Right, thank you very much, everyone. Are we going to do our famous ending section? I think we should. If you'd like to take it away, Darren.
Who'd please? Who'd please?
Wow, I was not expecting that.
No. Wow, I wish you could all see what I just saw, because I'm not really sure what I just saw. But Vic Reeves just came into the podcast and then left. It was really weird. So, if you couldn't hear that, what the hell Darren was saying, like me, this is the misplays section of the podcast. Mm. So, who would like to kick us off? Owen wants to go first.
Mark's symposium event, I misplayed against Phil, lost the game. Misplayed against Seb, lost the game. Not even going to go into it. I'm just being a bit silly here. But I got a play for you, which was Great Bray Shaman dragged a unit of harpies 9 inches forward, and then I did 16 mortal wounds to them with Blizzard because they were out of range, and then they were in range, and I Blizzarded them.
Great. I've got an Owen play for you when we played.
There's
a limited resources where you can turn when the objectives turn off. So his shaman dragged Severeth onto an objective so that it would turn off. And then for some reason, I think, lost priority and it didn't happen. But
I rolled a fucking double one on the two.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, brilliant.
So yeah, I tried on limited resources. I tried to pull his Severeth back onto the objective to turn it back on so they fucked up his score. It would have been really good. You even said at the time, we've got to talk about this on the podcast.
I did, yeah. It's fantastic play. Really pleased.
Thanks.
Amazing. Do you want to talk about your misplays then, Owen, or no?
Just pushed too hard against two shooting armies. Against Seb's 9 sharks. I did 100 Ungor Raider shots, D6 mortal wounds, and I charged 6 Bulgor in, and I killed 1 shark. And I left 3 sharks on 2 wounds each, which probably was just a poor allocation of resources.
That's not a misplay, mate. That's just a fucking bad time.
Yeah.
Just roll better, Owen. What's wrong with
you? Sorry, Mark, you were privy to that, weren't you?
Yeah, I can see that affected you greatly as well. I've never seen you look so unhappy at the table.
No, it was unfortunate.
Did you split fire too much, Owen? Should you have concentrated more?
Yes, I should have definitely concentrated more, not just on the fire, but just on my overall strategy. Probably the lesson there for listeners is don't always do the thing that you always do, even if it's the right thing, like stop yourself sometimes. Don't always play on the script. Mm. And then, yeah, against Phil, a similar thing. I kind of went for a big play, which was probably kind of 80% possible, and I couldn't do six mortal wounds on twos rolling ones. And, yeah, my balls got stuck and everybody got shot off. So, yeah.
Your balls got stuck, did you say?
They did. They got stuck.
Bulls.
My balls got stuck on Phil's boat.
Bulls got stuck on Phil's boat. Good. Bulls. Pronunciation is key, kids. Good. Darren, anything about bulls or balls or misplays?
No, my misplay is not listening to my own advice.
Oh.
So, loose lips sink ships. And I was in a game against Simon and his opener. So to give you some context, I was using some Stormcast that was had Severith, it had 9 long strikes, and it was very, very well crafted to deal with everything other than 12 fucking sharks, which is what Simon was running. Simon
it was amazingly painted as well, this list. It was so nice. It was glorious.
It was beautifully painted by Benjamin Sever, I believe.
Yeah, it wasn't me yet.
So Alex let me borrow his army. But Simon's opener against me, and it's a very big red, or at least that's what I thought, and Simon was very confident going into this game. But there were two very large pieces of garrisonable terrain in in the center of the board that were over all three objectives. And his opener against me was fucking terrible. He really gave me a chance in this game. I was really pleased with it. But it did require me hitting a big double. So perhaps any plan that relies on a double, I fucking aware, is terrible. But if that's your only out, then you take it. And in that situation, I believed it was. But he ran 6 sharks behind one piece of garrisonable terrain and 6 sharks behind the other. Didn't run. He just walked up there. And he couldn't shoot any of my army because half of it was off and the other half of it was behind scenery, etc., or out of range. So he allowed me, in my turn, I had Bastion. I ran right up to one of these garrisonal pieces of terrain. And what would have happened is if I'd have got the double, it would have been I'd have been able to garrison this piece of terrain and trap 6 of his sharks. What transpired is, of course, I lost the priority and Simon got to take the turn. And I went, oh, and here's the misplay. I went, oh, you're in so much trouble then. This is what I was going to do. You were going to be fucked.
Oh, because Darren, you told him what you were going to do.
I told him what I was going to do.
Oh, for God's sake.
Well, that's, yeah, but hear me out. So that's because I thought I was so terribly buggered because his army was so much better into mine and he was going to get to shoot me, etc. I thought the game was effectively over. So I was wrong on two fronts. So first of all, I'd given up in my own head. And I'd lost the game. And secondly, I gave him information that he didn't need. And it meant in his turn, he went, oh, fuck, I hadn't realized that. So he made sure all of his sharks were obviously 3 inches away from the garrisonable piece of terrain. And I was in that game in the second turn, in the third turn, in the fourth turn. And in the fourth turn, it was, you know, my army was basically dead. But if I hadn't have given him away that, it would have been a much closer game. So the misplay... Loose lips sink ships, people. Don't, even if you think you're buggered, stay in the game. Don't just give up like I had. And don't tell your opponent what you were going to fucking do if you think the game's over, because that makes the situation even worse.
Darren, how many times have you given people advice not
to? I know!
What's going on?
Don't tell people this shit. Live it. Do as I say, not as I do.
Very nice, Darren. Mark, do you have any?
Misplays. Oh my god. Well, yeah, probably the one that sticks into mind. It's going back to the worlds of 2022, I want to say.
You mean last year's one?
Yeah.
like a long time ago.
I have to look at my computer to see what year I was in. May, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. So 2022. Yeah, yeah.
Last year.
I was playing Beasts of Chaos. And I'm sure the guys will remember most of the terrain there was that kind of game map EU stuff, you know, the really big ruins. And I played that at Badmoon Cafe, and there's one particularly large ruin which you can just pass through there. You can move through it. And I think because I saw a gap in the ruin, it did something to my brain, which switched off the part which knew that terrain was impassable. And I set my Hearthstone up in such a way with my Doomball that I wasn't able to move my Doomball the entire game. And to make it worse, I think I was playing, God, who was I playing? I think it was like the French B team kind of dragon player. And he was just beside himself with mirth. He was he was having the best of times.
Yeah, I bet he was. Very good.
You've got no one to blame but yourself there, have you?
No, absolutely not. No. Oh, that's me.
Very, very good. Very good. Right. My misplay is a community misplay because, everyone, you've been listening to this podcast long enough to know that you should never be too excited. You should never be too excited. How many of you are getting too excited? Stop getting too excited, you saucy beasts. Stop it. I've seen it so many times. Was it Nova on the internet? I've seen multiple X threads. All of you are getting too excited, killing stuff, and forgetting you've got stuff to come off the board onto the board. It's Bulls. It's Stormcast. It's all of it. Stop it, all of you. Stop getting so excited. So that's my misplay for everybody. Remember, you've got other stuff. Don't handicap yourself. You got all this other stuff that you can use.
I did that at Mark's event. I didn't tell you this actually, Mark, but Jody beat me in game 5 and I reminded him not to allow his Canary to die because they were off the board at the end of his turn 3. At the same time, I forgot to bring on my 6 Enlightens. So
he didn't remind you. Jody.
I remembered in the shower on the Sunday night and just had like a massive H-bomb moment. I was like, you bell end.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah.
So even our expert co-hosts are getting too excited. So please stop getting too excited. Stop it.
I was so excited to help him beat me. Shit.
Yeah. So there you go. Right. Thank you very much. I think we're at the end, gentlemen. So I think all that's left for me to say is, Mark, thank you very much for coming on. And I hope you enjoyed our chats.
It was a very unique experience. Thank you, Al.
I'll take that as a compliment. And Darren, Owen, thank you as always.
Yes.
Do keep sending all your comments, your questions into the X thread. They are enjoyable when I manage to get around to them, but do please send them in. We do try and answer all your questions. And as I said, next episode will be about movement and movement techniques. So keep your ears peeled and your eyes crossed. That's the right way of using that.
May I just say, Mark, thank you for improving my gaming experience and for improving the scene. I think you're a fantastic TO. I really enjoyed all your events, and I think we've had a lasting effect.
Oh, bless you, Darren. I mean, I've had one beer now, so there's every chance I might start crying. But nah. Thank you, nonetheless.
Good stuff.
Well,
and I know that Steve is a listener of the show, isn't he? And I know that he fast forwards the first 15 minutes of this, but just in case he stays right to the end, I think I should say that him and Dan run a really great event at Bloodshed as well. Probably, you know, if not the, then certainly one of the best events in the UK calendar. Well done, Steve and Dan.
Oh, well, what are that? Look at that. Lovely all round. So that lovely thing to end on. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Be kind, look after each other, and we'll catch you all next time. So cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.